Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Bird Brained Ramblings podcast. My name is John and I'm your host. I guess you could call me that. Welcome and thanks for joining me on my birding adventures. Stay tuned in and join me for the adventure. Hey everyone, it's me, John. I'm back. I know it sounds crazy. It's been months and every podcast I say that I'm going to be more active and more consistent about posting updates and posting podcast episodes. And here I am. It's been 6 months, literally, since my last episode. And here I am. I'm back. So I am so sorry for the huge lapse in time here. Life just kind of got crazy after February. And I'm just now getting back to having a little bit of free time on my hands and finally being able to put my brain back around a podcast and how to record and all that kind of stuff. It was just a lot. So, but I'm really excited to be back. So looking forward to some future birding adventures, as well as kind of reviewing some of the ones that I've had since February when I recorded my last episode. Let's go ahead and start out with some news here, though. So there's a lot that has happened in the past 6 months. Many of you may remember me talking about our Easter play that we were getting ready for at our church back in February, and the Easter play practice started, and that's one of the things that kind of kickstarted busy season for me. On top of that, we had migration season happening in the spring. Migration season starts late February, early March, for the earliest migrants here in Georgia. So shortly after my last podcast, I was already back into birding really heavily for migration season and things, which took up a lot of time as well. This summer's just been crazy busy with some other stuff too. You're going to hear about all of it eventually. We're going to start way back in February and kind of move forward from there, talking about birding and my big year and things like that. So I'm really excited though. So here we go. The biggest piece of news is probably the fact that I had to put an early end to my big year, and it was really a hard decision to make, but looking at it now, it was clearly the right decision to make. Back in April, May, that area, we had some family things happen that just made it to where I needed to be with the family more than I was. I needed to stay close to the family, not be on the road all the time and things like that. Plus, as I had mentioned in previous podcasts, gas prices are insane right now. And at that time, I was still driving an SUV. So all this traveling for birds, while it was fun and while it was necessary for a big year, it was just not logical anymore. And so I had to make the hard decision to go ahead and put an end to my big year. I did end my big year with 283 species of birds, which was actually above my target for my big year. So in roughly 5 months, I was able to reach and pass my goal for my big year. So I really felt like that was awesome. That I did set my goal low to begin with, because I anticipated some things to get in the way. And so, as anticipated, some things got in the way, but it was really great to meet that goal and to exceed that goal. The memories that I made during my big year time, or my big 5 months, I guess, the memories I made during that time frame, they're never going to go away. I can take pictures and things like that, but the memories, they're the things that never fade. And so I'm really thankful for the time that I had. I'm thankful for all the travel that I got to do, all the birds that I got to see. It was just some amazing opportunities. I'm glad I took the opportunity when I had it, and no regrets here whatsoever. If I had it to do over again, I might have done my big year earlier, maybe 1 year earlier or so, but at that time, I was still really getting back into serious birding, so it wouldn't have made sense anyway. And maybe maybe in the future, there'll be an opportunity for me to do another big year. And so I'm kind of hoping for that, but we'll have to wait and see. Until then, the goal here is just to keep birding and keep enjoying birds, keep enjoying the outdoors, and sharing my love of birds with other people. So that's really the biggest update for me at the moment. We'll catch up with some other stuff that's happened as we go through the past couple months of birds, and I get to share some of these adventures with you. So So make sure to stay tuned, I guess. And, you know, we'll get through some of all this really crazy birding stuff. Okay, so the last time that I recorded a podcast, I was actually recording on February 21st of this year. And I had just gotten home from a road trip up to the mountains, and I had shared about how cold it was and how, you know, I got to camp up there and at Moccasin Creek State Park, got to visit Brasstown Bald and the Brandon Farm and Taft Road hotspot, got to see some amazing birds out there, as well as the Floyd Creek Church Road hotspot, all up on the north side of the Atlanta area. And so, you know, here I am, you know, it's the middle of summer now, we're in August here, and the heat and humidity are up. It's been a stormy couple days, and thinking about cold is just kind of like weird at this point. But you know, going back then, you know, I just try to put myself back in my shoes where I was at that point, you know. And the really cool thing was, a couple days after I came home from that camping trip on the 26th of February, I got to do something really, really neat. I was able to volunteer at a bird banding station here, just outside the Metro Atlanta area. It's at Panola Mountain State Park, and there is a bird banding group that meets there on a regular basis. And I had been in touch with the head bander, I guess you could say. I guess that's what you would call him. But I had been in touch with him for a while, sharing about my big year, sharing about how much I wanted to, you know, come banding one day and just get to experience, you know, what that was like. And so he'd thrown some dates out there for over a year now. I've been trying to get out there. And I said, you know, if during my big year, I have to go bird banding. Even if I only go once, I have to go bird banding. There's no choice about it. And so I was really excited when I finally had the opportunity to go on the 26th of February, a really early morning. If I remember correctly, we were out there at like 5:45. It was still dark because you have to get the nets put up, before the sun comes up, obviously. It doesn't do any good if you wait till the sun comes up. So we're out there in the dark, and I had never done anything like this before, and it was cold, and I did not have waterproof boots on, and the area is kind of, well, the area that it's at is a floodplain, and so, and it had been rainy on and off for a couple days, and so it was pretty slushy, muddy, and here I was completely and totally unprepared, but I didn't know what to expect when I walked into this, so I just went prepared like I normally would. So, the head bander was not there that day, and it was actually an assistant bander from, that was a volunteer with, the group, and she was heading it up that day, and so, it was fantastic getting to meet all these new birders and stuff. Obviously, 5:45 in the morning is not the time that you really want to be talking, to strangers and getting to know them. So when we first got there, it was just kind of like, grab a bag and follow me, you know, and so I got to help put up the nets and stuff. But as the sun came up and things, before we made our first run to go get birds out of the nets, we took a second and we circled up and just kind of introduced ourselves. There was a couple new people, or maybe I was the only new person. I think I was the only brand new person. There was some people that hadn't been in quite some time. And so they were kind of like reintroducing themselves, and everybody's just getting to know everybody. Probably one of the coolest things that happened, though, I was really excited when I got to meet someone that I had been in communication with before. And her name was Miss Ann Armstrong. And back in the Christmas bird count season, I had been on the schedule to work with the Christmas bird count in Pine Mountain, Georgia. And I don't exactly even remember what happened at this point, but I wasn't able to, I wasn't able to go on that count. And later on, I looked and had seen the checklists that were made. I had volunteered our property in Pine Mountain. I had said that, you know, it would be open for use as long as I was there, but I wasn't there. And so I did look online later and found that there was a group from that CBC that came out and parked just outside the property and sat at the property line and birded out on the road. And they got a decent list from the road there. But one of the people that was in that group was Miss Ann. And so I had communicated with her back and forth several times. I'd asked her some questions about the checklist that she made. Not interrogating questions like, were you on my property or anything like that, but just questions about the the checklist that she had made outside our property, as well as, you know, how did the CBC go? You know, I hated that I didn't get to make it, but how did it go? And so we had communicated back and forth, but we'd never met each other face to face. And so it was really cool. We didn't even know who each other was until we started introducing ourselves. And she was standing next to me and she said, my name's Anne. And I was like, you kind of look like that Anne that I know from Facebook. And then, you know, we kind of made a connection. And so it was really neat. But we circled up, we did a little intro, you know, kind of explained how things worked. And so I got to, you know, just pick a group to go with and kind of just followed. The first time you go banding, you don't get a lot of hands-on experience, which it makes sense. You know, they don't want somebody brand new who's never manhandled a bird before trying to go into a net and untangle these birds from the nets, because, I mean, these birds are fragile. You know, their legs especially are very fragile. You know, their necks are very fragile, so you have to be really careful when you're getting them out of the nets. And so, really, I was just tagging along and watching. And so I was really excited when I went out on my first run. They always say that the first run of the morning is the most productive, typically. And so we went out there, and sure enough, man, we had, I want to say we had like 15 birds in our first run just from our two nets. But I think they had a little over 30 just from that first run. And it was really neat getting to watch the process, before they were even done processing all the birds we brought to the first run. We had to go out and do a second run, and, you know, it was cold. Yes. You know, it was an exhausting day. You know, it was a long day. It gets longer in the afternoons when, you know, the birds are not flying as much and you're not catching as much in the nets. It was kind of like, oh, well, you know, this isn't as much fun, but it was, we had a great time. It was a really cool experience. And I did get to hold my first bird. I got to hold a song sparrow, and release it, as they trained me on the two different ways to hold birds, which is the first step towards being a, being able to assist in banding and assist in extraction from the nets. And so it was a really cool opportunity. We had lots of American woodcocks and Wilson snipes during that morning as the sun was coming up. They were everywhere. And, you know, I had gotten excited when I saw one at the farm, at our farm in Pine Mountain. I had seen one and I was like, oh, this is really exciting. And then, you know, here they are everywhere. And I'm like, okay, so it really wasn't that big of a deal, you know. But we had, you know, those birds. We had some American kestrels. These were not in the nets, by the way. I should probably specify that. These were not banded birds. These were just in the area. Most of the banded birds were things like, we had sparrows, we had some wrens, I think we had a couple finches. I know for a fact that we did have, a brown thrasher, because I have videos and pictures of the banding process with the brown thrasher. The assistant bander was explaining to some friends of hers that had come along, you know, just kind of like explaining the banding process to them. And so I was able to watch and got some really great videos and stuff. We also had a pretty feisty red-bellied woodpecker. He was stuck in the nets, man, and he got his tongue stuck in the nets, and he is just biting the people that are trying to get him out, and, you know, he's making so much noise, and it was really intriguing watching them extract that bird. It shows how difficult it really can be extracting birds from these nets, so it's not anything to take lightly. You have to take your job seriously when you're banding. And so, I mean, it was a really cool experience. I really enjoyed it, and my goal, of course, is to go back and get involved again. That's the first and only time I've been able to go so far, but my goal is to go back and become more active with that group once things calm down overall in life. And so, but it was a really cool opportunity. And I, you know, if you ever have an opportunity to go bird banding, I would definitely recommend it, because there's so much education that happens there, so much that you learn about the birds, you know, and just being that up close and personal with the birds can teach you a lot. Just, you know, there's a lot that you can learn. And so it was a really neat experience. And I'm really glad that I had that experience and that I was welcomed. I know one of the things about the birding community that a lot of people talk about especially on other birding podcasts, is about inclusivity in the birding community, and how, you know, for a long time the birding community has been exclusive. Now we're trying to be inclusive, and I'll go ahead and tell you that, you know, I was a complete stranger to all these people, just about, except for Miss Anne. But I was pretty much a complete stranger walking into this birding station, and I felt welcomed as if I had been a friend of theirs for years. Obviously, birding is the common topic that we all have in common. It's the glue that holds us together. But it was really cool because I didn't feel like a stranger. You know, I felt completely welcomed into the group. And so they were a great example of what the birding community needs to be more like. And so I'm really thankful to the Panola Mountain Bird Banding Station and all of their volunteers. It was a really cool experience, and I definitely won't forget it. That day, just out there at the Power of Flight area at Panola Mountain State Park, we had 37 species and almost 250 individual birds. I know that we had a lot more pictures of the birds and stuff, but I'm looking at the checklist right now, and there's only one picture, and it's of an American kestrel. So I don't know what happened to those pictures, but they are out there somewhere. But it was really cool. I'm really thankful for it, and I can't wait to go back. So after my bird banding experience, I really started focusing on just birding my local spots for a little while. I was kind of waiting for migration season to really pick up. I mean, obviously, you're going to keep birding no matter how slow it is during migration season, because you never know what you're going to come across. But I was more or less birding my local areas, waiting for bird activity to increase in the area and in the state of Georgia overall. So for a couple weeks, all I did was, you know, some basic birding. I did have a really cool, this is just kind of like a side note, but on the 19th of March, I had this really awesome encounter with a beautiful barred owl. I've got some great pictures on the checklist that I will include in the show notes, this checklist from the 19th. And what we were doing is my mom and I were in the car. We were driving around the back part of our property, and there's this one little area. It's a wooded area over a very small creek. I mean, I don't even know if you can really call it a creek. It's just really small water overflow. And you kind of go down a hill. It's kind of like in this little ravine, low area. And so we had come around this corner and gone down the hill towards the creek, and I'm just driving like, you know, like normal. We had gone out back to the backside of the property to look at some other birds and had seen some really cool stuff, but I did not expect to see a barred owl this close. And Mama, she looked at me and she's like, there's an owl. And so I stopped the car and I'm like, where? I could not see it. Man, these things can camouflage like nobody's business. But as soon as she pointed it out, it was maybe 15 feet in front of the car, probably not even 15 feet in front of the car. And, you know, obviously it's not ideal to be that close to an owl. It's just not. It's not ideal to be that close to any bird. But here I was, you know, sitting 15 feet from a barred owl. So what did I do? I took the opportunity to step out of the car, not get any closer, not intimidate the bird in any way, but just step out of the car and grab my camera, and I got some beautiful photos of this bird. I was a little bit interrogated by someone in our birding community about getting too close to the bird, and I explained, like, this was not on purpose. This was completely on accident, you know, and when I did get out of the car to take the pictures, I did not get any closer. I literally opened the car door and stood outside to get these pictures. We sat there for, gosh, probably 10 minutes watching it. It just kind of sat there. It would look at us. It would see something out of the corner of its eye. It'd turn its head, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It was really neat getting to see this bird up that close, though. It was just a gorgeous bird. I've always loved barred owls to begin with. And the pictures that I got, I mean, it just shows the detail of these birds, how detailed they are. But, I mean, that was just one of the encounters, but I had a lot of, like, you know, just typical birding encounters for a while. Spent some time out in Heard County, did some birding out there, and, at a friend's house. It was, she has a beautiful yard, with lots of It's surrounded by different habitats, but they're very forested habitat. They've got a nice sized creek that go around the edge of the property. Had seen some beautiful birds there and heard some great birds there. So it was just really great leading up to the next big birding day that I had, which was March. It was March 24th. And I took the day and drove out to Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge. So I still had to work that day. I can't remember. It was an odd shift. I didn't have to go until later. And so I got up super early and drove down there to Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge out to Pond 2A. It is a really well-known hotspot. And if you bird in Georgia, more than likely you are familiar with this hotspot, because this is one of the best places in the state, really more or less just on the northern end of the state, but one of the best places in the state to see both Bachman's sparrows and red-cockaded woodpeckers. Red-cockaded woodpeckers are still endangered, and they have, you know, just a couple colonies around the state of these birds, but they are pretty much guaranteed. If you go to Pond 2A, you can just about see them anytime. You know, they're very vocal, especially in the mornings, just beautiful birds. And so I had gone out there, to see the Bachman sparrow, and I did get this Bachman sparrow, did not get any pictures. It was a very difficult bird to see. I did not expect the Bachman sparrow to be that difficult, but it was. And so I was out there for a while, you know, probably an hour and a half, somewhere around there. Well, I mean, I guess the checklist is right here. I could look at it, but, it looks like, an hour and 37 minutes. And so I didn't do too much walking. It was a lot of back and forth on the same path. But I got to see, the red-cockaded woodpeckers and the Bachman sparrow. Only got a very quick glimpse of the Bachman sparrow. Did hear it, but it was the sound of the Bachman sparrow when I tried to record it was being overrun by the red-cockaded woodpeckers, as well as some white-eyed vireos and yellow-throated warblers. They were just talking like nobody's business, and I really could not hear the sparrow on the recording, so I didn't get a photo or a recording, which kind of stunk, but they are known to be there, so while it is considered a quote-unquote rarity, I was able to, you know, go ahead and report it, and it was approved, because people know that it's there, you know, it's always been there, or not always, but it's a regular there, so we know, as well as the red-cockaded woodpeckers. Now that one I got some great pictures of, as well as some audio recordings. It was a fantastic opportunity to see these birds. I had never seen one. This was a lifer for me, as well as, no, I'm sorry, it was not a lifer for me. I've seen them before. But this was the first time for the year, so it was a year bird for me, and it was really neat getting to see them. I've got five marked on the checklist. I honestly don't think that number's correct, but it seemed like there was a lot more than five red-cockaded woodpeckers out there, but just gorgeous birds, got some great pictures and some great audio recordings. And, you know, I kept birding out there. I got a black and white warbler, I had a pileated woodpecker, some flickers, a couple vireos, some swallows, you know, just your typical birding, kind of stuff. Nothing too great to write home about. The Louisiana water thrush was a great addition. You know, and I got some pictures of the yellow-throated warblers that were out there. But once again, nothing too crazy besides the Bachman sparrow and the red-cockaded woodpecker. But as soon as I got done there, I had to get in the car and drive all the way back to work, which was an hour and a half drive from Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge. And so I think I had to be there at 10 o'clock that morning, and I barely made it. But that just shows you how early I was out there. I started this checklist at 7:24 in the morning. If I did actually stay out there for an hour and 37 minutes, that means I left about 9 o'clock, which I guess it's an hour back to work. But anyway, details are beside the point, but definitely a great hotspot. You know, I feel like during the winter, they probably have amazing ducks at that pond, at Pond 2A. And Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge is huge, and I, you know, barely skimmed the surface of, you know, this great place. I only got to go to one of the parts of the wildlife refuge And so I'd like to go back out there eventually and do some more exploring. I'd like to go out there in the winter, see if I can get some waterfowl, see what all kinds of waterfowl they've got out there. This seemed like it would be a great place to be birding in April and May, because of migration season with the warblers. Really feel like you'd come across a lot of warblers out there. So it's got a lot of potential. It's just I haven't been back out there yet. So if you're ever in the area, definitely recommend Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge, Pond 2A, as well as all the other hotspots that are, you know, part of Piedmont National Wildlife Refuge. Totally worth the drive. Totally worth going out there. And the roads were gravel, but I mean, even though I had an SUV, I mean, I would feel comfortable taking, you know, a compact car out there. I really don't think you would have any issues on those roads, except for if it's like, you know, been raining for a long time or something like that, you may be, you know, a little more liable to get stuck. But to be honest, the roads were great. So, you know, nothing to worry about there. I know some wildlife refuges, you have to be really careful with that. So, but great infrastructure there. Great birding, you know, definitely recommend it. So trying to figure out a good stopping point for this podcast was kind of hard because I've got so much to review from this year, and I did kind of fly through the month of March, but I decided that I'd stop at the end of March. And we'll pick up in April, in the, you know, the higher parts of migration season. We'll pick up there with the next podcast whenever I get around to finally recording that one, hopefully more frequently, but don't hold me to that. So in April, we had a huge influx of American golden plovers in the area, and just, I mean, I had never seen this many reported in a spring before. They were everywhere, and they just kept showing up in random farms and things like that. It was really neat getting to see all of them. And so one of them was reported at the Bostwick Sard Farm out in Morgan County, and I was like, okay. And I had seen these reports coming in for almost 2 weeks on these plovers, and I had not been able to go out there and chase them yet. So I went ahead and I got in touch with my boss, and I was like, hey, okay, there's these birds that are being reported. Like, he knows I'm a birder, and he has been really great with working with me on my schedule during this big year. Let me get off early, you know, take a day off, whatever. And so I was like, is there any way that I can leave really early today so I can go and see these birds? And of course, he laughed in my face and then said yes. So I went out there to the Bostwick Sard Farm. I hung out for a little less than an hour. And was disappointed. They had just been reported here, and like I think they had been reported there that morning, because I think that was the deal. Is I had gotten to work that morning, and I had talked to him, and I said, I'm not going to go unless they're reported again today. And he was like, okay. And so if I remember correctly, they were reported at this spot that morning. And so I got out there. I hung out for a little less than an hour. I did get a horned lark, which, if I remember correctly, was the first one for the year. I got some blurry, barely identifiable pictures and a very faint audio recording, but I was able to get those for the list for the year, and it was a really cool addition. I loved watching them. I only have one marked, but if I remember correctly, there was two of them out there, just gorgeous birds, and the way they interact is just really neat to me. They're very active birds, and watching them was a blast. But so I got done there. It was, you know, it was a little after 2 o'clock when I finished there, and I was like, I just really aggravated. I looked at some other hot spots that I thought about going to try to see if I could see them, but they were further off, and I was like, I really don't want to drive any further away from home, because I still had stuff to do that afternoon. It was a regular work day. You know, after work, I still had stuff to do. So I was kind of on the fence, you know, do I drive further? Do I not? And so I actually made the decision not to drive further. And I put the address back home in my phone, and it took me a different direction home than it took me to the hotspot. And I was like, okay, well, this is odd, but it worked in my favor. We came to the end of this one road, and I honestly do not remember the name of the road, but we came to the end of this one road, and it ended at Highway 11 in Mansfield. and turned right on that highway and just started driving, and I looked, and there was this big farm pond. And as I looked, it was on the left, and as I looked, there was this huge group of birds sitting right at the edge of the pond, and I thought, there's no way. I mean, none of them have been reported here. There's absolutely no way that this is actually true. Like, this is not happening. So I drove right past it, turned around and came back, pulled into this little drive right in front of the pond, got out my scope, because the pond was pretty far out, got out my scope, and sure enough, I counted 22 American golden plovers out there. It was really, really cool getting to see all those birds. There was some pectoral sandpipers out there. There was a ring-billed gull flying around, some vesper sparrows. It was a really neat spot. There wasn't a lot there, but I did get the golden plovers, and I was really excited. I reported them. I got on the Rare Bird Alerts GroupMe and posted in there, hey, you know, I didn't see them at the Bostwick Sod Farm, but I see them here, you know, and shared the coordinates. Another guy came out there, and I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody that's really well-known in the birding community around here. For some reason, I just can't remember who it was. But someone came out there, and he had commented on my, or he had sent a message back in the group me and said, hey, you know, I'm headed out there. I'm going to come double check it. And, I mean, at first I was a little bit offended because it's like, well, I know what I'm talking about here, but okay. And so he came out there, and sure enough, he saw him too. He did not see 22, but he saw him out there. And so I'd got him confirmed, and a couple other people ran out there to go see him real quick, because this was not in Morgan County. This was in Newton County. So you've got your, you know, really hardcore county birders. You know, I mean, if you need that bird for Newton County, you got to go see it. And so some other people went out there and got to see the bird that afternoon. And I got to drive home and still had time to do everything they need to do. But I did get some pictures of the plovers. There are not, they're not really good pictures. They're barely diagnostic. We'll put it that way. But I was only out there for like 6 minutes, but you know, I saw the birds, got the pictures, and went ahead and left because I was trying to get home. And so, but I was really, really excited to get to see those birds. It was a really cool addition to my list for the year. It was one that I didn't really expect to get. That was not on my list of, hey, I think I'm going to see a golden plover this year. No, it was definitely not expected, but we had this huge influx. I don't know if you would call it an eruption or not. Like, I don't know if that actually qualifies as a bird eruption, because it was during migration. So I don't really know if you would count that, but it's kind of what it seemed like. You know, we had all these golden plovers being reported, and then they were probably reported for 5 or 6 weeks, throughout the state in different locations. And so it was really neat, getting to see that bird, not expecting to see it, added it to my life list. I just wish they had been in breeding plumage, because I mean, they're gorgeous in breeding plumage. Not that they aren't pretty in their non-breeding plumage, but, it would have been really cool to see them in breeding plumage, but it is what it is. So, but I'm really excited. You know, I was really excited to see those birds, and finally get to, add them to my list. So it was a really cool addition. And it was just one of those quick little day birding trips. So, a lot of those happened this year, and I look forward to many more of those, you know, day birding trips where it's like, hey, can I leave work early today? Why? 'Cause I need to go see a bird. And then he's going to laugh in my face again and hopefully say yes. So it is what it is. That's how we roll. But like I said, just a really cool opportunity to go see them. And I mean, out that direction, I will say this, there's a lot of sod farms and stuff out that direction, out towards Newton County, Morgan County. And there was a lot of birds out there. So it's definitely an area that is worth exploring more had I had the time. And maybe one day in the future I will, but you know, if you ever have a chance to go out that direction, great sod farms out there, and several hot spots, lots of birds. So totally worth it. So there you have it, folks. That's pretty much a wrap up of the end of February and all of March for my birding big year. I'm really excited to share April and May. I didn't really do much birding in June or July. Haven't done much recently, but I did chase a rarity or two this month. So I'm really excited to share those with you too. I mean, obviously migration season is great. I get to share with you about my first ever pelagic birding trip, which was pretty rough. So, you know, it is what it is, but I mean, it was an interesting experience. I learned that I will never use scopolamine patches again. And I will also make sure to drink water. But that's a story for later. So, but no, it was, it's great, you know, getting to catch up on some of this birding stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And enjoyed just hearing about some of my crazy birding stuff. Just a quick look into the future. Well, a little bit in the past and then in the future here. Since my birding big year did end, it's, you know, I'm still birding, but I'm not birding nearly as hardcore as I was. You know, still obviously in love with birds, that I can't deny that. But it's just life gets busy. And so, you know, right now I'm not able to continue birding the way I was, which kind of stinks, but it is what it is. However, here in the near future, I'm really excited because I have a friend that has been introduced to birding. I finally got to introduce him to birding, and he so far has fallen in love with it so much that I let him borrow my Maven binoculars, which never happens. And so I let him borrow those so he could bird a couple days. And you know, it's just, it's really exciting getting to see somebody else, you know, have that spark of interest that, you know, we all started out that way. We all started out, with that spark, you know, like, hey, this is what birds is about. And it got us interested. And, you know, most of us have had a spark bird. And, you know, mine being the Heermann's Gull that I've talked about in the past, the one that I saw at Tybee Island. And, so, you know, it's cool getting to see that excitement in someone else. And, you know, getting to know that I was able to have a part in that, you know, I was able to introduce, this guy to some birds and, you know, just got him interested in birds. And now he hopefully one day will share the love of birds with someone else and it'll just keep going as a domino effect. And, you know, the birding community will continue to grow. Plus we need some more younger birders, you know, we need more people who are not, you know, retired white men birding. You know, we need diversity. We need, age diversity, race diversity, gender diversity. Like, we need that because the days of exclusivity in birding are over and the days of inclusivity in birding are rushing in. And so, I'm really excited to see how the birding community changes in the future, obviously. I know this just got way off topic really quickly, but it is what it is. So, if you enjoyed the podcast, you know, do me a favor, rate, review, and subscribe. That's just how my podcast gets shared. That's how my podcast, you know, gets brought to more people's attention. And, you know, it's not all about me. I don't want my podcast to be the big thing out there, but what I do want is for birding to be the big thing out there. So, you know, don't hesitate to rate, review, and subscribe. Tell me what you think. I mean, I know a lot of these podcasts, the ones where I'm the only one talking, may seem a little bit boring and dry. And so, you know, I apologize about that. I am hoping to get some guests on, and have a little bit more banter, have some more excitement and things like that, in the future here. But you know, tell me what you like, tell me what you don't like, you know, it's not gonna hurt my feelings any. So, but, and it'll help me grow, you know, help me figure out what works and what doesn't. So, but anyway, rate, review, and subscribe, and tune in next time when I talk about April, which was the first of the two big migration months in the state of Georgia. And I've got some great stories from April, but May is the one that you're really going to want to hang in here for. So, definitely tune in for the May episode whenever I get around to that. Like I said, I am going to try to be a more, consistent about posting, and so I can get caught up from the stuff that has already happened and I can start talking about new birding adventures as well. So that's my goal. We'll see how that actually works. And like I said, I'd also like to get some guests on. So, we'll see what the future holds for bird-brained ramblings. I don't know for sure, but I'm along for the ride. So I hope you are too. Thanks so much. Thank you for tuning in and hope to see you next time.